What's up, dirtbags? Welcome to episode 259 of the Midwest Angler Podcast. I'm Scott Sturman, and I'm joined, as always, by Matt Deitch. What's going on, dude?
Oh, you know, not much, really.
Just hanging out.
Just hanging out. Chilling in the beat lab down here.
That's right.
Always admiring your nice rack up on the wall. Oh, I mean, on the wall, yes.
On the wall. I appreciate you checking it out.
Well, it's kind of right there in my face, so.
All three of them. Nope. Winter has officially returned. Not as much for us as what it has for the people, even just 30 minutes north of us.
Yeah, it's crazy how the line is so close.
Yep. You know, even doesn't take very far to go west of us. You know, Sioux Falls is only about 40 minutes away from us, and it sounds like Sioux Falls got a lot of snow. Got snow 30 minutes north of us up into Minnesota, and that's good for them.
Yes.
That's good for them. That's, you know, Minnesotans, you know, always bragging about being, you know, up north and whatnot. Well, that's when you're up north, you get up north weather.
That's the most Minnesota thing that could happen is they get 10 inches of snow and we get 2 inches of rain.
Yep, that's right. That's right. Episode 259 is brought to you, as always, by our good friends over at Dakota Angler in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. And go and see Josh, Todd, and the crew. And they've got a bunch of sales going on right now. Matt, you want to start off with a couple that they're throwing out on the Facebook page?
Yeah, one of them is they got a special on the Daiwa Sea Lion line counter reels. They're marked down to $110 a piece. So if you're a big trolling fan, you know, now's the time to stock up on those. If you thought about wanting to get a line counter, which is really nice if you're going to do a lot of trolling, get you some of those ordered up. And why not, if you're going to get some line counter reels, why not stock up on some Salmo Hornets? They got those for $6 as well.
Tanner Vogel thinks it's Christmas right now. Like, oh, I know. What in the world just happened? Line counters and Salmo Hornets?
Is this the best day ever? It is, Tanner.
It is. Pair that with a dirtbag code and holy moly.
Yeah, jump online and check them out.
Yep. Josh also says that there's a bunch of Veritas LTD rods at $50 off. Revo winch rods on sale. Fluger President and Tryon combos on sale as well. And he says, for Pete's sakes, the cold weather can go away.
Yep, we're ready.
Ice season is done. Time for a little open water.
Exactly. We haven't had ice on the lakes for how long? We get that little taste of that warm weather. We all want to just be out there fishing in the nice stuff.
That's exactly right. Stop in there, like I said, talk to Todd. Try saying that three times fast.
No, I'm not.
Talk
even
to Todd. Do it. Do
no,
it.
No, I'm not
do
going
it.
To.
I will not nope. proceed with this show.
Talk until to Todd. Talk to Todd. Talk to Todd. All right. There you go.
Talk to Todd. Talk to Josh. Talk to their helpful staff. But if you can't make it in there,
go to www.dakotaangler.com.
And use code DIRTBAG at checkout.
Dang right. You're going to save yourself some money.
That's all it comes down to right there.
Yep.
A little extra green in the pocket. So, what were we going to... I even had... Oh, a couple housekeeping items that I want to touch on before we get into today's show. Spring cleanup. You know, the last couple of years, we've done a spring shoreline cleanup. And this year, kind of a wonky year, obviously. Normally, we're not really looking at doing a cleanup quite yet because there's some snow on the ground. There's still ice on the lakes, whatever. I think we're gonna do it again this year. I don't know how this weather's really going to shape up. You know, what the weather's going to be like 7 days from now, 14 days from now. I'm not going to go out there in the freezing cold and do it. I'll tell you that, but, we're going to wait. But, just wanted to throw that out there to people. If you are out and about over the next couple days, or if you have been, I know Ryan Hale from over in the Okoboji area has been out picking up a lot of trash. Yep. at boat ramps and different stuff. So
I've had a lot of people ask me too, like there's youth groups that are always looking for something to do, like all these like programs that are always like, oh, we want to find something to help out with. Like, and I told somebody the other day, hey, you know, they were kind of talking about, oh, we need to go pick up some trash. I was like, we have a spring cleanup contest going on at the Midwest Angler Podcast in the spring every year. Try to get on board with that.
Yep. Yep. We'll put a Facebook post out here in the next couple weeks, hopefully, and start kind of pushing that. But if you find yourself out walking around shed hunting or doing whatever, you know, we call it the spring shoreline cleanup. And obviously, you know, with being a fishing show, we would prefer that it was along a lake, along a river, around a pond, whatever. But, you know, if you notice that there's a bunch of trash in a ditch that on a road that you take every day to work, or, you know, if you're out shed hunting and you decide to pick something up, we're not going to discriminate against anyone that just wants to pick up a little trash and do the right thing. Trash. So spring cleanup is going to be coming around the corner, hopefully sooner than later. And like I said, we'll put a Facebook post out about it. If you want to do it right now, take a picture, save it for 2-3 weeks and post it on the posted on the post when we get it set up.
Yep.
I guess I'm assuming everyone knows what the spring shoreline cleanup is. In years past, what Matt and I have done is there's a local park along the river here in town. We've gone and walked the shoreline of that park. We've picked up trash, thrown it in garbage bags, and that was Matt and I's contribution. And then what we do is we ask the listeners of the show, the people that follow the Facebook page, whatever, to go out and every single grocery bag of trash that you can pick up, you know, if you go out and you do one today and one next week, whatever, all it has to be is a grocery bag full of trash, 5-gallon pail, whatever you got, just go out, pick up some trash. We're not going to, you know, anything is better than nothing. Post it on that post, and I'm assuming there'll be a Dakota Angler gift card or something, you know, for the giveaway on that. We'll figure something out later on, but we'll do something like that. And yeah, we'd appreciate anyone that would want to participate. Bassmaster Classic in the books now. Yeah. Gotta tip our hat to a lot of the
northern guys did really well.
Absolutely, they did.
Grand Lake kind of sets up good for northern fishermen, I feel like.
Well, it always kind of has. Our buddy past guest Bob Downey won an open there, and that's really what springboarded him into making the Elite Series. Adam Rasmussen, a Wisconsin angler, took home second place. Jay Shakurit, past guest Wisconsin angler, in fourth place. Corey Johnston, obviously a Canadian. Coop Gallant,
Kyle
Canadian.
Patrick, he's from New York.
Really? Okay, yeah. So he's a northern guy. We'll take him.
We'll take him.
Easton Fothergill, 16th. He's originally from Minnesota and now is down in Alabama going to college fishing bass. I think Brandon Polinick kind of
Polinick's Idaho guy.
Yep. Whatever the case, Gussie in 31st. Yeah, whatever. Really set up well for a lot of the northern anglers. Obviously, where's Hamner? Alabama?
Yep.
I think, yeah, he's an Alabama guy. He won it. Young dude. It was cool to see him win. Obviously, it would have been really cool to see Rasmussen win, but you know, that's cool too. That's cool too to see.
Oh, yeah.
Just a young dude and seemed very humble. And
anytime somebody wins their first one, it's quite cool to see, and just their emotions and stuff like that. So
yeah, his life changed.
And for him to be able to go out there and lead it from wire to wire. I mean, going into that day three, he tried to act like he was all calm and cool, but you know that it's just like, you know, the nerves are going. And he got out there and he kind of started slow. I mean, he wasn't like, he knew he had to be close to 20 pounds in order to win the thing. And he was only sitting at like 11 for a long time, 13. So then
what did he end up with, 14 or 16 or
something like 50? Yeah, something like that. He ended up winning by like a pound or so. So
but in the back of his mind, you got to know, like, 25 pounds is not out of the question. Right,
especially down there. It's happened before.
Yep. I mean, a guy could turn in 25 pounds so
easily.
So when you're catching a 15 pound sack and you're only 5 pounds ahead going into it. I mean, he didn't feel comfortable going back to weigh in.
Nope. And it's just always fun to watch the classic and just know what it's all about and what it means to everybody. And it's probably the best fishing tournament of the year. I mean, I love the Northern Smallmouth tournaments, but I mean, it's the classic.
It is. Yep. Today we got Travis Soroki on. Travis is from up in Minnesota. I know Travis dates Steph Lawson, but outside of that, I really don't know a ton about Travis. I know he's in a lot of the Target Walleye. He does some stuff with Target Walleye, Brett McComas. Very thorough with videos and tackle tips and whatnot on social media. He's a well-respected angler, and we're going to get to know him a little bit more on today's episode.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Hey, Travis, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Oh, we're doing good. Doing good down here.
Yeah. How much snow you guys get up there?
You know, it's kind of hard to tell because it was pretty wet. Probably in the neighborhood of 10 inches to maybe a foot.
Holy buckets.
I got out this morning and I have a couple neighbors that I helped snow blow and got the snow blower out for pretty much the first time this year.
You know, I think that's God's way of paying you guys back for getting ice way earlier than us. Kyle Lynn was always making fun of Matt and I for not getting out ice fishing early on in the year when we still had open water, and we kind of gave it to him this morning when he was sending us Snapchats of a foot of snow. So that's right. It's just karma.
Yeah, you know, the good thing is our lakes really need it. So, you know, we didn't have hardly any snow this winter. So any bit we can get right now, that should definitely help the lakes out.
Yep. Yeah, we've been getting rain down here since this front moved in and stuff like that. And, yeah, we desperately need it down here too. I mean, we obviously didn't get near enough, but it's crazy how low the lakes are.
Yeah, I mean, I was actually – I've been on a couple of lakes already – a couple of weeks back when it was in the upper 50s and low 60s, got to get out, and both the lakes that I was on are at least 2 feet low.
Oh, crazy. I know I listened to a DNR report the other day, and they were talking about how some of these small lakes and these shallow ramps, the way it is, like, you're going to really have to be careful putting the boats in this summer because, like, if the water doesn't come up, there's going to be a lot of hazards there.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, most definitely.
Well, moisture makes moisture, so hopefully this is a step in the right direction.
Absolutely.
So, Travis, we always like to get our shows started off with a couple of random questions. So I want to know, what is your favorite movie?
My favorite movie, probably going back to my high school days, would be Top Gun.
Top Gun. All right.
You goose or Maverick?
You know, I'm probably more of an Iceman.
Iceman. All right. Okay. Just so you can do the whole, like, with your, the whole mouth,
exactly,
like, chop.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I get it. I guess my random question would be, if you were going to write a book, what would the title be?
Oh, what would the title be?
Yep. Ever thought of this?
You know, about a real adventure.
A real adventure. I like that.
Yeah, R-E-E-L.
Yeah, I can get down with that.
I think you ought to think about that.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
Maybe you're already writing something. Yeah. We've never had a guest drop a book release on the show, but don't hesitate to think about it.
Yeah, you know, if I ever did write a book, I probably could fill it pretty quickly. I've led a blessed life, let's just say.
Cool. Well, that's why we got you on. We want to hear about it. But before that, one more random question. I want to know what the coolest hole in the wall restaurant you've ever been to is.
The coolest hole in the bar restaurant I've ever been to It gained some fame on a show that I like to watch called Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives.
Yep.
The Anchor Bar in Superior.
I saw that episode, yeah.
Yeah? You been there, man? Yeah,
I saw the episode.
Okay.
It is a hole-in-the-wall bar, but if you like a good burger, I don't think it can be beat. It's a pretty cool place for good burgers, and, you know, I'm not going to win any skinny mini contest, so I like a good cheeseburger now and then.
Well, welcome to the club.
No skinny minis. I'm always looking for restaurants with good salads, but can't ever find them, so I got to settle for a burger.
Yep.
Damn right? It, anyways. All right, Travis, so tell us a little bit, where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Sauk Rapids, Minnesota. It's a smaller town right next to St. Cloud, just separated by the Mississippi River. So I grew up right along the shores of the Mississippi.
Okay. And what's like your earliest fishing memory?
Going with my dad and my grandfather in a canoe, fishing the river, as well as the first time I was ever fishing was on the shores of Pelican Lake up in Orr, Minnesota, which is the neck of the woods where my dad is from. And I caught my first fish off of a public dock in Orr Bay on Pelican Lake.
So
I was three.
Okay, early three, on.
Yeah,
early,
really
on.
Early then.
Yeah, yeah.
What kind of fish? What did you catch?
Bluegill.
Bluegill. I think that's everybody's kind of first, I mean,
right?
That gets them addicted to fishing.
Yeah. Yeah, most definitely. And in the river, like when I was a kid, you know, I used to go fish bullheads, and then, you know, you'd have, you know, seasonal movements where you'd get some crappies, some walleyes, smallmouth bass, of course. So I pretty much grew up fishing.
Nice. Do you have one memory from your childhood that just really sticks out more than fishing memory that just really sticks out more than any other one?
I have a pretty funny one. I had borrowed my mom's Toyota Celica when I was 16 years old just to go fish above the Sartell Dam. There was a spot that I had been catching some walleyes with a few buddies, and ended up going there one day by myself, and I caught a very large northern pike, and I didn't know what to do with it. I knew I wanted to keep it, right, because it was like the biggest fish I had caught to date, and it was, you know, at that time, I mean, it was like, if I remember right, it was like a 38, 39 inch northern pike.
Okay.
When you're 16 years old, that's a pretty big fish.
Dang right. Dang right.
Yeah. And I didn't, you know, didn't have anything. I'm like literally 2 miles from home. And so I'm like, well, I know my mom's got a blanket in the back of that Toyota Celica. So I wrapped it up and brought it home in the back of the Toyota Celica wrapped in a blanket. And brought it around to the local bait store and had it weighed. There was a contest going on that I ended up winning the biggest pike contest, and I got a free mount out of the deal. And that fish still hangs in my mom and dad's house right now to this day.
Did your mom know you were trucking that thing around in her car?
Not until I showed up in the garage. You know, this is like way before cell phones and stuff like that, so I couldn't really do anything besides what I did was, you know, just put that fish in a blanket and wrapped it up and drove it home.
I like that.
I think that you need to find a Toyota Celica and mount that thing right on the hood of it as the hood ornament and drive around.
Yep.
Right.
Nice. So, Travis, you know, up in Minnesota right now, a lot of the fishing seasons are closed to protect the spawn. But you've been getting out already once this year chasing crappies, and you do some walleye fishing on pools 3 and 4 on the Mississippi River. Let's dive into the crappie fishing first. If us three were going to go out crappie fishing today, how are you going to start that off? Like, where are you going to go to try to find those crappies? Not necessarily the lake, but where on the lake are you going to start targeting?
Right now, I'm going to look for, I would say, which I would call secondary basins, not the deepest spot in the lake, but spots that have deeper water next to some shallow water where I know those fish are going to be once that water temperature, you know, warms up into the, you know, low to mid 40s, let's just say.
Yep.
So I'd be keying in on depth ranges of in the neighborhood of 10 to 20, 25 feet at the most, near some typical spots that would be, you know, in that 5 to 8 foot of water, where I know they will pull up when once the water temperature, you know, gets like in that 44 to 48 degree weather before they go, you know, spawn, you know, and the spawn, the crappie spawn is a long, long ways away. So, you know, right now I would just be looking for, like I said, those secondary, deeper water spots right now.
Yep. So once you get to that area, are you using forward facing sonar trying to find them, or are you just kind of fan casting around and seeing what happens? What's the program then?
Well, I tell you what, until this year, I'd fished with a few people that had forward facing sonar. I don't have it on my own personal boat, but, my girlfriend, Stephanie Lawson, just got a brand new Lund, Pro V Bass, and it has, you know, I'm in, screen envy right now, and we had that out. We had that out a couple weeks ago on one of my favorite crappie lakes, and turned on the live scope and just started cruising in a spot like I just described. Got off into that 10 to 14 foot of water, and it was just loaded. And I'm just like, well, this looks like a good spot. I mean, the screen was just peppered with fish, and we put the motor on spot lock and started fan casting, and you probably caught well over 50 crappies in the 2.5 hours that we were out.
Very nice.
And it was, yeah, I mean, the live scope is a huge, huge, huge advantage. And my next boat that I get, I will definitely have it on there.
So now what techniques are you using? Like what kind of, you know, baits are you tying on this time of year?
Yeah, right now I like using small hair jigs. There's a gentleman here in northern Minnesota that ties a really, really nifty hairy jig, super lightweight. They're 1/100th of an ounce.
Oh wow.
He makes them 1/80th of an ounce. They're actually dynamite for ice fishing too. No bait on them. They're multicolored, so they'll be like a pink and white, pink and chartreuse kind of color combination with the hair. And it's all about the fall rate. I mean, these things fall super slow, you know, probably upwards of a foot every 3 seconds. Oh, and so like you have your float set at about, you know, 4 to 6 foot typical, and you know, you just cast it out and let that you know, light jig fall slowly, and you know, it really entices those fish. And another option I use is a small weighted jig head, again in that 1/100th to 1/80th of an ounce, with a Bobby Garland. It's called an itty bitty swimmer. It's like a small little micro paddle tail. I've had a lot of luck with those the last couple of years.
So you're using both of those underneath of a float?
Underneath of a float, 100%, yes.
Okay, I was sitting here thinking like, man, 1/100th, like, what are you doing to cast that out? Like, man, yeah, if there's just a smidge of wind, you are in trouble.
Yeah, and even like the, you know, the way it is now, we don't fish them with the sinker, so you just rely on the weight of the bobber that you're using to cast these out. And it's kind of a specialty pencil bobber that, you know, I got turned on to about 30 years ago. And I had to buy a bunch on Amazon last year because they ran out of selling them in like Fleet Farm and stuff where we used to get them. Found a bunch on Amazon, so I bought, I think, probably a lifetime supply of them.
That's how you got to do it sometimes.
There is no such thing for, when it comes to tackle, there is no such thing as a lifetime supply for me because I lose all kinds. So
yeah.
Now, are you, when you cast it out, are you like kind of like slow twitching it back towards the boat, or are you just leaving it sit there and let it kind of do its thing?
So the most common thing that I do, I have like basically three real cadences that I use. I'll use a slow, steady retrieve all the way back to the boat. The other thing I'll do is cast out, let the lure settle, and then just slowly sweep my rod tip like 2 to 3 feet and let it pause and sit there again. Because you got to remember, this hair jig is kind of like a pendulum. You know, it swings up with the slightest movement. So even if I move that rod tip, you know, let's say slowly 3 feet, that hair jig's probably going to travel upwards of a foot and then just fall back down.
Yep.
And then another thing that I often will do is just like you were saying, kind of like when you're ice fishing, like when you're really tapping really fast, I'll kind of do that same thing with the rod tip, you know, and just give it like little tap taps, and then let it pause and kind of do that all the way back to the boat.
Now, what's your setup on that? You using just super light line?
4-pound test is pretty much all my panfish rods have.
Yep. And what rod and reel or don't really nothing special?
I'm sponsored by Temple Fork Outfitters, so we've had some input in designing a few rods. I've designed some walleye rods for them, but they have a really nice trout panfish rod, both a 7-foot ultralight and an 8-foot. They just came out with the 8-foot this year, and that's kind of what I've been using to start off my year so far. I have a couple older 10.5-foot rods that I used when I first started fishing steelhead, and they're kind of like these really bull whippy rods, and you're able to cast light lures super far with those.
Okay.
And then my reels don't really have any sponsorship affiliations to anybody, but I really like and prefer Flugers. Flugers seem to have an awesome drag no matter what reel you select. I use a lot of Trions and Presidents are the two series that I use the most.
Yep. No, both two quality reels.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And so you were out, what was that, two weeks ago chasing crappies?
Yeah, March 13th. The evening of March 13th is when Stephanie and I got out.
Okay. And that really kind of was more like May weather, and now we're right. Now we're back to winter, so it might be a little bit before you get back out again.
Yeah, you know, it was crazy. It was Sunday the 10th, we went to Lake Minnetonka just to break in her boat. It was the first time that boat was on the water. So just did a quick little, you know, hour down on Minnetonka. And, you know, Stephanie ran the boat and, you know, powered up everything. And then we just came home and, you know, it looked like the weather was going to be so nice on Wednesday and Thursday. And I left work a little bit early because I'm pretty weak in that regards when it comes to spring crappie fishing. We went out for a while. And then the fishing was so good, she went out with a girlfriend of hers the following day. So it was starting off really good. It actually kind of surprised me. The lake that we ended up fishing just a little bit south of St. Cloud had, you know, 42 to 44 degree water already.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's really crazy how fast the water will warm up when you get some nice, you know, sunny days. And that, I mean, it just seems like it heats up pretty fast.
Oh, for sure. Especially, you know, like the surface, right? I mean, you know, and by surface, I you know, really the first 3 feet, you know, the water can get warm just from the sun. And that tends to pull those fish in from the deeper water. You know, they can feel that.
Yep.
And that's what kind of starts to trigger their movements. And you know, then when you get a cold front, even now, like say, like, you know, normal open water for us here in central Minnesota is typically around the 8th through the 15th of April. And, you know, you deal with some cold fronts then. Same thing, you know, those fish will just pull back off onto that first drop off and sit there for a while and go, boy, we kind of missed this one, you know. And then all of a sudden it warms up for a few days and then they go back to where they were. So I'm not expecting a big change when we are able to get out on the water. And looking at the 15-day forecast, that's probably going to be, I'm going to say in another 8 to 10 days, the conditions will be right to get back out. Not to say that you couldn't do it, you know, sooner, but comfort-wise for us and, you know, action-wise for the fish, it's looking at about another 8 to 10 days we'll be back on the water.
Nice. Oh, yeah. Nice. Yeah, this will be that year that you get, like, 5 ice outs.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Like ice fishing was, you know, I'm not a huge ice fisherman, but, you know, I did get out, and, yeah, everybody was like, okay, well, this is the third first ice. Right. Yeah. It should be good, you know, so... Yeah, we ended up running all the way up to the Bemidji area to go ice fishing, and that's really kind of unheard of.
Yeah, no, pretty wonky,
wild year.
Now let's dive into the walleye fishing on pools 3 and 4. Matt and I were kind of talking about it. We've had some guys talking about the Missouri River before, but we've never really talked walleyes on the Mississippi River. So this will kind of be something new for us. Pools 3 and 4 for a guy like me that doesn't know a whole lot about the Mississippi River. Where exactly is that?
It's down in the Red Wing, Minnesota area.
Okay.
So, you know, a popular place is Hagar City, Wisconsin, which is just right across the river from Red Wing. You know, and you have the two rivers, you know, you have the St. Croix that comes in up by Prescott into the Mississippi River there, and that would be Pool 3. And Hagar City, there's a pretty popular resort there called Everts Resort. A lot of people launch there. The access is open the majority of the time because the river stays open the majority of the time. Except this year, there was a period when the XL Energy Power Plant had shut down for some maintenance during January, of course, when we had actually like a cold 2 weeks. It actually froze down there. And that's probably the first time it's froze down there in about 15, 20 years.
Huh. And with that warm water, then the fish just really kind of keep hanging around there?
Yeah, the fish just, you know, they migrate where they'll start right now as that water temperature has gotten warmer. A lot of them will pull out of Lake Pepin and make the trek up towards the dam up there in Red Wing. And, you know, the fishing can be phenomenal. There's areas around a couple rivers that come in. You know, you get the discharge out of the rivers. Areas like that can be really good. You're looking really for current seams. And I'm by no means an expert. I've been down there probably 24 times in my lifetime, but usually like when I go down there, I'm down there for like a long weekend. And definitely spent some time down there pulling Dubuque grapes, pulling crankbaits on three ways, and just a single jig head with a plastic. We don't fish minnows too much because one, your hands get too cold, and you seem to get a lot of smaller sauger with minnows. So we're using, you know, bee fishing tackle, paddle tails, Northland tackle, some impulse paddle tails. Bright colors seem to work better in the rivers most days, but natural colors can have their moments too. You just really gotta, you know, work with the person that you're fishing with and try different colors until you hit on one. And I'm kind of stubborn in a way. I like my colors, and boy, there have been times I know my good friend and tournament partner Doug Robinson has looked at me and just like, dude, why don't you just put this on? I'm catching fish. And I was like, no, I'm gonna catch one on this color, because now it just becomes a kind of a mind over matter thing. But the river can be color sensitive at times, but for day in and day out, you're fishing with brighter colors down there.
Now that river, for us down here in Iowa, you know, a whole entire closed season statewide is not something that we deal with. A little bit over at the Iowa Great Lakes, they have the walleye season shuts down. But up there on the Mississippi River, is it the whole entire Mississippi River that's open to walleye fishing year round, or is there a little bit of a closed season there, but it just opens earlier than the rest of the state? How does that work there?
It's only the border waters. So, okay. The border waters with Wisconsin and Minnesota, the border waters with Minnesota and North and South Dakota, and you know, the rest of that, there is a closed season.
Okay. Yeah, I guess that makes sense. Yeah. Because, you know, people from South Dakota or you know, people from Minnesota could say, well, we launched on the South Dakota side, and probably just easier for the whole entire deal, right, to just be open.
But the great thing about having that, you know, accessibility, I've had my boat on the water every month but January.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
so
impressive.
I mean, there can be some phenomenal fishing down there, and it's a river, so you never know what you're going to get. I mean, I have not personally caught, but I know you can catch paddlefish down there, a couple different kinds of sturgeon, big flathead catfish, you know, and then everything else, you know, the muskies, walleye, sauger, northern pike. We've got some big northerns down there, white bass. I mean, you just never know what you're going to catch in the river.
Yeah, that makes it fun.
No. How much different are the pools? Like, I mean, is it like, oh man, pool 3 is way different than pool 4? I mean, you know, I guess when I'm sitting here thinking about the Missouri River, obviously, you know, you get farther north and Oahe and Sharp, you know, maybe a little bit deeper, I guess in my mind, I'm feeling like they're deeper. I'm not really that sure, but bigger water than, you know, when you get down to Francis Case and whatnot. You know, I've been over to La Crosse with Matt before, yeah. You know, and that basically looked like it was the Everglades, like it should be Louisiana or Florida or something. Right. I mean, just, I felt like there should be alligators there, but obviously it was Wisconsin. How much of a big difference is there, you know, from pool to pool on the Mississippi River?
Well, there can be, you know, some differences. You definitely want to rely on a GPS for navigation. I mean, because you can get in some of these back channels and get totally spun around. But as far as, like, structure, they're fairly similar. You know, with Pool 4, you end up in Lake Pepin. So that's, you know, obviously a big water, big lake. There's a definite shipping channel, you know, that these giant container ships use. And so that there's a channel that's fairly easy to locate on your electronics and fish. The one thing you got to watch out for on both Pool 3 and 4 are wing dams. You know, they have rocks that divert current to keep the shipping channels cleaned. And they hold a lot of fish, but you really got to pay attention to where they're at and, you know, what the water levels are on the river. The one cool thing that you have with Pool 3, one, you would lock through. So to, you know, to have a small fishing boat and lock through and, you know, experience that of what it's like to go in a lock and have them raise the water level so you can lock through to the next pool. That's kind of a fun experience. And the Pool 3 has the St. Croix River, which is a lot cleaner water. And so you have like a confluence that comes, and that confluence can impede in the Mississippi River upwards of like 3/4 of a mile. So you will have an area of clean water more often than not where that St. Croix is coming in. And, you know, for a fisherman, that can make a big difference. I fished a few tournaments down there, and, you know, if you can find that clean water, that there could be a pile of fish there.
Huh. Yeah, that'd be kind of... I've seen it before in the Gulf of Mexico where the, I believe it's like the Caloosahatchee River comes in at Fort Myers, Florida, and that's the overflow of Lake Okeechobee, and it goes out there to the ocean, and I mean, it's like straight up brown water coming out of the Caloosahatchee, and then it, you know, mixes with the blue water out there on the ocean. That's pretty trippy. You just think it should just, well, it just mixes, but... yeah, it'd be kind of wild to see on a river like that.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, this year it's been, you know, different because we haven't had the runoff. You know, usually by now, both Pool 3 and 4 are near flood stage, so you're having to deal with a lot of debris in the water. And, you know, I mean, that can be, you know, a 25, 30-foot tree that's floating downstream, you know, and
yeah.
You definitely got to be careful when you're running that river. It's nothing to be taken lightly, that's for sure. You got to keep your head on a swivel.
Yeah, I think that. They always call, what do they call them, the river rats that do it. It's like those guys, they're built a little different than the rest of those guys. They're going wide open. I don't know, like Scott said, I fished on out of La Crosse in a bass open as a co-angler, and I was with a Japanese angler, and he didn't speak any English. I don't think he understood a word I was saying, and he was just flying down the river. We were going like 60 some miles per hour, and I'm just like, oh boy, like
like, yeah,
it was, you know, it was quite the experience.
The nice thing is, you know, with some of the connections that I've had in the industry, I've had the honor to be, you know, fishing with a guy by the name of River Dan Ricks and my tournament partner Doug Robinson. They got a lot of time down there, and it's fun to learn from them guys, you know, that are on that river often.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I think if you're going to spend a whole lot of time on there, you need to have that person that's like, all right, let me show you the ropes.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
Now you talk about your tournament partner there. Do you fish a lot of tournaments?
Kind of pulled back. I have fished upwards of probably 10 to 14 events a year in years past. Doug and I fished the AIM Professional Walleye Series for a number of years. And now we've just kind of pulled back a little bit. We still fish a few tournaments together, but just haven't got on that grind for a while. But now the Minnesota Tournament Trail has kind of gotten a little energy boost here recently. They got some new owners that have taken over that series as of this year. And they fish a lot of the same lakes that we did on the AIM Professional Walleye Series. So now there's going to be a couple different pro tours available in Minnesota. So, you know, I'm kind of looking at the schedule, let's say, so to speak, right now at this time.
Yep. Yeah. No, you know, Matt and I, we fished a couple bass tournaments here probably 4 years ago, and then through COVID, you weren't allowed to sit and mingle with the other guys during weigh-ins and whatnot, and that was really the thing that Matt and I enjoyed the most was getting together with the dudes at weigh-in, and if you weren't allowed to do that, it was kind of like, well, screw this, we ain't going to do it anymore. And you know, now obviously 2020 is gone, and I don't know, I kind of got the itch to get back into a couple tournaments. It you know, one thing about it, tournaments make you fish on days where you otherwise maybe wouldn't. You know, it could be raining, it could be windy, whatever, but you know, that's kind of the coolness of it too, you know, makes you go out there and fish.
Yeah, and you know, there's some other tournaments available too that are not let's say as competitive. Like last year, for the first time, my girlfriend Stephanie Lawson and I, we jumped in the Minnesota Teen Challenge up on Gull Lake up there. And you know, there's it's a multi-species tournament, as well as it is you know, you can fish for bass, you can fish for walleye, you can fish for northern pike, you can fish for panfish, and then they have a multi-species category, and you don't really have to declare what you're fishing for until you come to the scales. You know, and it was kind of fun because we kind of started out thinking we were going to fish for walleyes. And then we got on some bass, and then I caught a walleye. And then, you know, then we're like, okay, let's go for this multi-species thing. And by the time the tournament was done, Steph and I ended up finishing sixth in the multi-species class. So that was kind of fun.
She's going to have you fishing bass tournaments in no time.
Yeah, you know, well, this is the funny thing is, like, I look at it as I started out fishing a Wednesday night league around the St. Cloud area, and it was, you know, it was a multi-species league, but you always had to have your six bass every night. So I always kind of jokingly say I already was a bass fisherman, and I just kind of graduated.
Yeah, oh, we'll, yeah, we'll let that
we'll
slide.
We'll let it slide.
Now, you also do some veteran fishing events, right, Travis?
Yeah, that's a real passion of mine. My dad was a Vietnam vet. He did two tours over in Vietnam in the Navy from 1962 to 68. And I myself did not serve, but I got involved in 2018 with a television show called American Heroes Outdoors. And they're on the Sportsman Network. They used to be on Bally's, but kind of graduated the way the show was gone. And the show was actually started by two veterans themselves, Colonel Scott St. Sauber and Dave Morris. And they came up with this show concept when they were deployed overseas. And I had met Scott a couple times at various tournaments. And we were right near each other a couple times during weigh-ins. One year, I think he finished fourth or fifth, and I finished, you know, with Doug fifth and sixth, and vice versa. We swapped that for a little bit, so he got to know me a little bit just in line one year, and I kept on asking him. I'm like, you know, if there's any way I could get involved, I would love the opportunity. And he's like, you know what, I'm going to go to the board. And he went to the board of directors at American Heroes Outdoors and made a little pitch for me because I was very passionate about helping veterans. And well, we're at 2024 right now, and to this day, I'm still the only ambassador for American Heroes Outdoors that's not a veteran. So I take pride in that.
Cool.
Yeah,
cool. And is that the only organization? Or you got a couple organizations that you do some stuff with, don't you?
Well, so one of the things that American Heroes Outdoors is heavily involved with, it's a day of fishing called Trolling for the Troops. and that's headquartered out of Camp Ripley in Minnesota. And there's a contingent of guides that take veterans on the Mississippi River in these really cool jet boats. And then there's a big contingent of us that go over and fish Mille Lacs Lake. And, you know, we beat up on these giant smallmouth and walleyes that Mille Lacs has. And we have an absolute great time. And then the other thing that I get involved with is the DAV here in Minnesota. Not the DAV in general. The DAV has a great outdoors program. I help out the Carlton County DAV, which is kind of up by the Duluth area. And they put on a big event at High Banks Resort on Lake Winnipegoshish in August. And I coordinate all the guides for that. And that's kind of morphed into, you know, a little bit more for me, as the DAV has provided, you know, some monetary value income for me to keep assisting with them and helping them anchor these programs, so to speak.
Very cool. Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm sure you've heard, you know, some pretty neat things being out in the boat with those guys.
Well, yeah, for sure. I've had some definite, life-changing experiences. At one of the DAV events on High Banks Resort, I got to fish with a World War II veteran.
Wow.
And his grandson, who just got back from Afghanistan.
Wow.
And, that was, you know, there's not too many World War II veterans around, and this was just back in 2018. You know, so, you know, and he has since passed. And one of the veterans that I was fishing with a couple years back at trolling for the troops, he has since passed. He died of one of those brain cancer incidents that you've probably heard about in the news from the burning of the trash and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, yeah, he died of one of those, a young man. He wasn't even 40 years old. And, you know, just the stories, you know, tanks getting blown up and guys pulling their comrades out of a burning tank, you know, with diesel fuel on them, and they're on fire, yet they're going back and trying to save their bodies. You know, at some points, all I can do is just kind of sit with my head down and go, wow. You know, and the thing is that at the end of every single one of these veterans say thank you to you.
Right.
And, yeah.
And it's like, sometimes I can't even bring myself to words, because it's like, I don't even feel that that's right. You know, I haven't earned that right for, you know, it was my honor to take you fishing for, you know, a half a day.
Nope.
And I've got, one gentleman, sends me a Christmas card every year. I went fishing with him one time, and we had some connection, you know. He was a Vietnam vet, and he liked a couple of the stories that I told about my dad, but every single year I get a Christmas card from him. And there was another guy that I fished with up at High Banks Resort, had a service dog. And the first time that he had ever went fishing in his life was with me at this event up at High Banks Resort. Service dog was amazing in the boat. The dog didn't do anything at all. I was kind of jealous. It slept all day. Took a big old fat nap out on the lake, and we were catching walleyes. And the cool thing was this guy was fairly nonverbal. He just wasn't comfortable with me, right? I mean, he had a buddy of his that was with and his service dog. But by the end of the day, you know, he was telling stories and cutting it up. And now he follows me on Facebook, interacts with me. I see him every year now at High Banks Resort, and he always comes up to me. And I absolutely love that. That feeling you can't replace to me.
Yep.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. You know, like you kind of said, like, we think it's just, you're just taking them out fishing, but it's really more, it really is more for of that. And especially for them. I mean, it's nice for them to be able to get out there and be somewhere doing something they love, but also getting to share those stories with somebody that really is genuinely interested in them and wants to hear them.
Well, yeah, for sure. And it's therapy. I mean, there's probably no better therapy than to be outside and be with some people that are like-minded, whether you got to get your mind off of something or you can vent about somebody or, you know, something that you share a same life experience with. And that's where you can kind of make the difference, you know, and sometimes frankly, I mean, all you do is go fishing, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
Right, yep. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. It doesn't have to be more than that.
Right, but more often than not, and that's the beauty of this, like, trolling for the troops event, typically the way they have that set up is they have an older veteran paired up with a younger vet. You know, so now they have somebody to lean on that's probably been there, done that. And that's kind of the experience that you have with the trolling for the troops event.
No, that is really cool because, you know, some of those older veterans, you know, they know what it's like to get back and have to get back into, you know, civilian life and, you know, go back to work and, you know, turn into a family man and whatnot. And, you know, that, I mean, it's got to be really hard. Like I'm not trying to say it in a bad way, but you know, I mean, you turn these people into warriors and then all of a sudden next month you're supposed to just come back and, you know, yeah, go just to the T-ball game.
Yeah,
you know,
like, be a regular Joe,
that's,
yeah.
You know, that's right. That's a hard transition, but, you know, an older veteran, that, has been through that, has lived that, you know, might be somebody that this younger veteran can, you know, kind of bounce some ideas off of or whatever, but, it's probably neat for the older veteran to, you know, see a young guy that, you know, might remind him a little bit of himself, you know, from 20, 30 years ago.
And from what I understand, like a lot of the VFWs and the Legions, their numbers are kind of going down. Like the younger generation isn't getting involved. This is a great way to, like, you know, like Scott said, and like you said, is to pair them up and maybe this will get the interest in, to, you know, for this younger generation of, you know, veterans to get involved with those organizations.
Absolutely. And there's so many different programs for them. I mean, you know, Camp Ripley alone has their whole, it's called Camp Ripley Outdoors. They have a whole program. There's a deer hunt. There's a turkey hunt. There's trolling for the troops. And then there's all the other organizations. You have the DAV Outdoors program here in Minnesota. You have, you know, Wounded Warriors. There's so much stuff going on. And the one thing, I spend a little bit of time at our local VFW here, right by my house. You know, they have great food. And talking to a lot of the veterans there, and this is something that has been echoed no matter where I've traveled, still to this day, the Vietnam veterans that I've talked to just don't feel worthy to join these programs. And I'm like, these are what these programs are for, sir. I mean, they're for you. They're for everybody. But yet still the Vietnam veterans, I mean, it just pains me that they still feel that their stuff wasn't worth it. And that is not the case at all. I mean, those are the persons that we should, you know, be shining their shoes, you know, every place they walk.
Absolutely.
And, if there's one thing I could ever try to communicate, it's to get those Vietnam veterans, because, you know, there's not many World War II veterans left. And, you know, Vietnam, you're next.
Yeah.
You know, and all these people are, you know, 70s to mid-80s, you know, that were in that Vietnam era. And get out, take advantage of these programs. All states have these. You got to do a little digging, but they're all available. And they should be all filled up.
Yep.
Yeah.
Now, to break away from fishing a little bit, Travis, we've never talked about this on the show, but you manage a drag racing track?
Well, so for a couple of years, I'll back this up. In 1993, at the age of 19, I started to drag race with my dad and my mom. And we went all over the place, and I have a 67 Chevelle Super Sport, and in 2006, I'd been doing pretty well, and I decided to buy another car, because one wasn't enough work, I wanted two, so I bought an NHRA legal super stock car, and toured the nation, went around with that car, and raced the Chevelle when I could, bracket racing, till 2015 when I lost my dad. My dad passed away in 2014. And I raced one more year and just, I won't say I fell out of love with the sport of drag racing. I just was kind of lost without my dad being my right-hand guy like he was. Several people stepped up, ran the car for another year, and then just kind of walked away. And a couple years after that, I went up to Brainerd International Raceway, you know, track that I raced at a bunch, and I got talked into coming up on the microphone and talking a little bit about racing, and kind of made that a little thing for a while where I would guest announce at a couple tracks, and then kind of worked my way into a job at Rock Falls Raceway in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. They were looking for a track manager, so I filled the job for the last couple of years as an interim track manager at Rock Falls Raceway in Eau Claire, and they hired a permanent guy this year, and looking for big things. I'll probably be back a little bit at Rock Falls just to see how the gang is doing. I already got booked for to announce the Lucas Oil Divisional race up at BIR in July. So I stay busy. It's a big passion of mine. Been around the sport again since I was a kid. You know, met the likes of, you know, legends like Tom Hoover and Don the Snake Perdome, Don Garlitz, all those people. You know, going into pro stock, Warren Johnson, Bob Glidden. I just love the sport, and if I wasn't at the time fishing, I was at the racetrack when I was growing up. So that's why I say I've kind of led a blessed life at the beginning of this, and I really have. I mean, I've worked my butt off. I haven't had anything given to me, but I've done pretty much at the age of 51 everything I think I've ever wanted to.
That's what I'm talking about. No, yeah. We gotta dive into this drag racing stuff a little bit farther here. So you said you an NHRA factory stock, or what was it that you said?
NHRA legal super stock car. It was an 85 Z28 Camaro with a 305 small block. Ran in the class super stock.
So I mean, is this the type of thing that, like, you're just wrenching on in your garage, or I mean, are we talking like you've got a dedicated shed for something like this? Like, I guess what I'm trying to get at is, like, are we talking like World of Outlaws type of deal, or are we talking about like the dude that's got a hobby stock more? Like, where are we putting this thing? Like, how fast are you going down the drag strip?
Well, in super stock, so it's based on the class. So you could have a car that would be fast for its class at 12 seconds flat, but you could run a car that runs 8 seconds and 160 miles an hour.
Ooh. Are you putting a parachute on the back of this thing?
In NHRA, it's if you go 150 miles an hour plus, you have to have a parachute on the back of the car.
Did you have one?
No, my cars all went around 125 to 132 miles an hour.
How fast is that ripping down a quarter mile?
The Chevelle would go 10 teens at 130, 132, and the Camaro, again, that was a 305 small block, and that would go 1028 to 1045, 1050 in there at 125 to 129 miles an hour.
You ever... Is it one of those deals, like, can you race somebody else's car in this? Like, you ever gone faster than that in a quarter mile?
Yeah, the fastest I went was 178 and change in a guy's dragster got to drive a dragster for a year in a class called Super Comp. So that was kind of fun.
Wow.
You got to about pass out going that fast, don't you?
What's that?
You got to about pass out.
Honestly, it is not a whole lot different than going down I-35 after about the first race or two.
Really?
Jeez.
Yeah.
I suppose it goes pretty fast. I mean, it's not like you're going that long.
It goes pretty fast, but it's amazing. It's just kind of like baseball players. Like, you hear them when they get in a groove, you know, the baseball look like a softball. Everything slows down for you.
Yeah.
It really is like that. It's like... I could explain to somebody what a 10-second run was like, and it would take me 5 minutes to explain it, and it just took me 10 and a half seconds to run it.
Right. Right.
Yeah, I have a Chevy Colorado, so I have an idea
what we're dealing with. You're talking about.
Right?
I got to ride the brake all the way to work every morning because she just wants to scream. But
no, I was blessed. There was a guy that my dad worked with was into drag racing big time, and he didn't live that far from me, so we kind of ended up sharing a building that we would lease together, and we worked on our cars out there, a nice heated shop in the south side of St. Cloud, and we had four race cars in there, and we were working on them all the time, and then we'd go race and come back and work on them, and you know, hopefully nothing broke, and go to the next one.
Yeah, you know, down here, dirt track racing is something, and we've got a track right here in our town, and Huset Speedway is right over in Brandon, South Dakota. So there's a lot of dirt trackers around in the area, whether it be sprint cars or hobby stocks or modifieds or whatever. But drag racing is just something that kind of foreign.
Yeah, we got a couple area. Guys in town that drag race. But
yeah, Thunder Valley. There. Yep. Yeah, yep. Yep.
I've been there, Thunder Valley in Marion, South Dakota.
That's right.
Yep.
Been there, and then going down into Iowa. There's a couple tracks in Iowa that we ran at, and then of course Brainerd International Raceway. Ran at Route 66 Raceway in Joliet, Illinois, St. Louis. So I traveled a little bit.
Cool.
Nice.
No, that is cool. That is cool. But
fishing's definitely less expensive.
Yeah, right.
I believe that. Well, I don't know. Some of those new boats that can get pretty expensive too.
Yes, it can. Yes.
All right, Travis. Well, we've almost talked your ear off for an hour, and I don't know if there's anything else. I know you've got plenty of sponsorships. I don't know if you want to plug any of them or anything else you'd like to say, but I think I can speak for Matt when I say we appreciate you joining the show. It was a lot of fun.
Well, I definitely appreciate it, guys, and I do have a lot of sponsors. I call them marketing partners because I don't receive a lot of monetary compensation. But, if you let me run through a list, I can surely give some shout outs to a lot of people that helped me put my little program together that I can keep on continuing to help veterans.
You bet. The stage is yours.
So, Alumacraft is a huge supporter of mine. Power Pole, TFO Rods, Northland Tackle, Stoplight Bait in St. Cloud, Minnesota, DAV Chapter 18, Dr. Juice, Onyx, Westry's Marine, Thorn Brothers, Yellowbird, Humminbird, Minn Kota, Montana Jig, 23rd Veteran, Airwave Pedestals, Midwest Boat and Prop, Joel Loudenbach, Joe Works for Me, Keller Weller Realty, and American Heroes Outdoors.
Very good. Awesome. That's a good solid lineup.
Yeah, and I mean, they helped me out tremendously. Stoplight Bait, I can't thank them guys enough. Anytime I have a veteran thing, it's basically how much bait do you need, and, take it and have a good time. Send us some pictures.
Very cool. Very cool. Good to have guys like that in your corner.
Oh, it's amazing.
So, all right, Travis, we appreciate it, and I hopefully we can get you on again sometime.
Well, I would love that. Thank you guys very much for your time.
See you.
Bye.
And that was Travis Soroki up there in the land of lots of snow, Minnesota.
That's right.
Minnesota.
That was a lot of good information there. You know, I didn't, like you said, we don't really know much about the Mississippi River. So to hear him kind of explain it a little bit to us, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. I don't know. That is just so much different than the Missouri River and I don't know. Like I said, I didn't know how much different there was from pool to pool. If it was like, well, this one, it's crazy deep and super wide, but this one kind of more, islands and whatnot. I think it's all the way different all the way down.
Well, I think the Missouri River, you're talking about wide open spaces, so it can get pretty western out there with the waves and when the wind starts to blow and stuff like that, where the Mississippi, I mean, you get some of that, but not as much because, I mean, it's a little bit more protected. But, man, you're talking about 40-foot logs floating by. It's just like, ooh.
Yeah, and, you know, he talked about shipping, container ships. Yep. What the? Yep. Shipping ships? Like, what the? I don't know what the hell they're called, but, you know, talked about that. That's not something that you see out there on the Missouri River because there's no lock systems for them to keep going all the way down. And, yeah, I don't know. It's just like a whole nother country over there. But
yeah, really, I know.
Yeah, very cool, though, either way. So we're going to call that a wrap. We're going to get into the good news stories brought to you by Freedom Brew over in Larchwood, Iowa. Absolutely the best coffee shop. I don't care where you're from. If you're into coffee, you should be taking a stroll by Freedom Brew over there in Larchwood. It is just conveniently located about 15-20 minutes east of Sioux Falls, South Dakota. If you find yourself in the area, I highly recommend you stop on by.
I don't recommend. I say I demand that you stop by because you're not going to be disappointed.
You will not be disappointed. I don't know if you're a true dirtbag if you haven't been there.
You need to go there. It needs to be on your bucket list.
You can still be a true dirtbag if you haven't been there, but it's on your bucket list. Like right. if then you're still a dirtbag. But if you're like, nah, I'm a dirtbag, but I don't really feel like going.
I feel like it belongs higher than Europe on people's bucket list.
Higher than
trips.
Europe? Way yeah. higher than Europe. Way higher than Europe. Higher than, yeah, nothing higher.
No,
nothing higher.
Right.
Like it's the Taj Mahal. It's the Mecca. It's where you need to be. So, Freedom Brew, Larchwood, Iowa. Good news stories. Matt, you want to lead or you want me to take it?
You can lead. Go ahead.
I'm gonna give a shout out to the Iowa women knocked off West Virginia
yep.
here tonight. So they're continuing on with their NCAA tournament.
In the Sweet 16.
Yep. I'll give a shout out to Iowa State. Lot of fun. Obviously, Audi Crooks, just a freshman. They're going to still be doing great things. SDSU, you know, they did a great job too. Brooklyn Meyer from right down the road here, Dirtbagville. So if you're a SDSU girls basketball fan, she's from Lyon County. Whatever. A lot of good basketball being played in the area. Even Nebraska had a really, really good team this year. So I don't know. That's for women's basketball. Men's basketball, being an Iowa Hawkeye fan, we're just not really going to talk a whole lot about men's basketball. So I've never been a men's basketball fan. Always been a women's basketball
always
fan.
Yeah, yeah, you've just, always talked about it.
Yeah, for years and years. But I want to give all them a shout out. And the other thing I want to quick talk about is there's a lot of the volunteer fire departments in the area, and I doubt it's not just Lyon County, but I got a feeling it's all the way across the upper Midwest. This is kind of the time that a lot of those departments have their yearly fundraisers. I think they want to try to get them done before the farmers are out in the field, but a lot of the winter athletic events and whatnot have kind of come to a close. I think Larchwood might have their pancake breakfast this weekend.
Coming in, yep.
Little Rock has a steak supper this Saturday night. Rock Rapids has a pulled pork feed this Saturday night. I think Alvord last weekend had their pancake breakfast. Just a lot of them, you know, and that's just right here in Lyon County. A lot of the area's volunteer fire departments have their spring fundraisers this time of year. Go out and support some of that. Even if you hear, you know, it's not your fire department, but it's 20 miles away or whatever, go over there, support it. A lot of good food to be had, but goes to a great cause. And just go do that.
Yeah, I think I'm going to piggyback off yours a little bit there. And also, like, go support, like, your local Pheasants Forever chapters, your Ducks yep. Unlimited. I mean, yep. The nice thing about the Pheasants Forever is it stays local. Yep. A lot of times the Ducks Unlimited stuff kind of tends to go to the federal, and then it kind of gets divvied out from there. But it still helps support wetlands in your area. Even, like, the Walleyes Unlimited. Like, there's all these organizations. If even if you don't want to get involved and be a volunteer or anything like that with them, but you know, still, like Scott said, attend their banquets, because a lot of that stuff that they do go to help buy like public lands in this area. And you know, me as a pheasant hunter, you as a deer hunter, just outdoorsman, whether you like, even if you don't hunt, you use it, you might go on nature walks, you might go on it. It's
yep.
It's public land. All of us can use it. So those organizations need to be supported as well.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Even if you're not a pheasant hunter, well, I'm not going to support pheasants forever. Well, guess what? Deer live where pheasants live.
Right.
Ducks live where pheasants live.
Even if you just like to go watch nature.
Yep.
I mean, absolutely. We've talked about it on here before about, you know, doing your, everybody needs to do their part. So, go out there and support them, and you always get a great meal out of the deal too.
Yep, no matter what. Never been to one where it was like, that meal wasn't very good, but I guess with that being said, I don't have a ton of meals that I think aren't very good. So whatever the case, appreciate every single one of you guys. That is episode 259. We will see you next week on episode 260. Later.